Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 149. First off, this one's a bit over. I mean, it's not really that overdue. I guess technically 1 week overdue. This is our Olympics rewind. We did take 2 weeks off, which means that in our totality, we've taken 3 weeks off, which is not that bad. Not that bad. Today, unfortunately, the three of us are not together. I think it'd be really nice to do this together, I guess. We'll hopefully get to do more of a season recap together, I suppose. We are all in different places, so we're meeting up over the internet. But yeah, just first off, wanted to say thank you for everyone's patience across those 2 weeks when we didn't put out any episodes. And also just in general for everyone's support during the Olympics. I think most of us were trying to stay off our phones. And not always. Sorry, bad joke. But we got so much positivity. We got so much positivity. There was some negativity, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point in this episode, but there was so much positivity across the from all the different fans out there and stuff, even though the three of us admittedly did not race, or the games did not turn out for the three of us as we would have liked. But so first off, once again, thank you to the fans for that. And we're going to start off with a little check-in, a little round table. I'm just going to go quickly off because mine's the most simple. Back up in St. Moritz, training with Cinta. I'm unsure about what races I'm doing because I haven't gotten into any of the Diamond League races yet. And then also I actually got a bit sick post-Olympics. So I'm coming back from that right now. So I'm uncertain, but I'm just here training in St. Moritz. Ollie's also in Switzerland. What are you up to, Ollie?
Yeah, so I was in Italy for a week with my family after the Olympics. And then I got back into Zurich on the 17th. And then got a nice little train, picked up some action burgers on the way. Shout out to Jordan Donnelly on that hookup. Such a good burger place. For a 2-hour train ride to Lausanne, where I'll be running my first race post-Olympics, which I am excited about. And then I'll be heading back to the US the next morning, like straight away, going straight back. And then I just got confirmed for Zurich, 1500 meters, which is massive. And then Diamond League final, then break. But I'm in Lausanne right now. I requested Stewie McSwain as a roommate. So if he walks in through the door, we might get a special guest. But I'm in Lausanne. It's beautiful weather here and I'm excited.
Hell yeah. Lovely to hear it. George, where are you? You're outside.
Hello, everybody. George is currently in Porto, in Portugal. It's I'm on Europe tour post Olympics. Have not run a step since the race, including a cool down, which was entirely impossible. And we're just on a healing the gooch journey. So what have we
been there?
I think it's been two weeks. It's been a nice few days in Bordeaux with my family post-Olympics, and then I've just done a week in Spain. Now I got a week in Portugal, and then heading to Sardinia next for a week. And then where are we going? Malta and Amsterdam to finish the European tour. So got a few weeks left and just trying to rest the body up and enjoy Europe while we're here.
Jeez. That ain't too bad. What date do you get back to the US then?
Something started early September. I'm actually not 100% sure. I need to crunch some numbers. But early September. Actually, shout out Porto. I just some guy was just walking down the road today and we had a Coffee Club fan stop me on the street. So shout out to Dan Squires who stopped me for a selfie on the street in Porto. That was pretty sweet. And I told him that we were recording this afternoon so that an episode was finally coming. So yeah, thanks again, everyone, for holding out a couple of weeks.
I have an obscure Coffee Club fan moment that I would like to talk about as well, now that you bring one up, from the Olympics. So I got drug tested after my race and I do the drug test. I think it was a PB, by the way, no big deal. And I'm walking out and there's the guy who's kind of at the front desk who's just checking, he's like checking things off, you know, like he's clearly kind of like manager type person there. Like he's not actually doing the test, but he's kind of overseeing everything. And he gives me a very friendly look and I look at him and he's very familiar, but I don't know where from. And he says, oh, hey, Morgan, like he knows my name. And so I'm like, oh, interesting. And then the next day I walk out, no big deal. The next day I'm sitting outside there when Cinta's getting drug tested and he comes up to me and introduces himself. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but when we did the Gus plushie drop, there was one fan who made it onto our Instagram because they missed out on the drop because their child was being born. And this was the fan. That was the guy. And I asked him, I was like, wow, that's so random. Like that I got tested and stuff. Like, is it actually random? Like who you guys picked? And he's like, no, I picked you. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Well, he said he didn't just, I think they don't just like pick anyone. He said, I picked you because you haven't been tested in the last 6 months. I was like, okay, that's a valid reason. But he actually like got to pick me, you know, if that makes sense.
That's the most obscure fan interaction we might ever get.
Did you watch your penal cup?
How's baby doing?
Unfortunately, we didn't. That would be next level if he happened to be the one that had to watch me pee.
Maybe that was we'll what I, that was my day. That was my.
That's interesting. Speaking of coffee, the coffee scene in Porto / the brunch scene. I feel like this would remind me of like I haven't been to Melbourne, but it feels like Melbourne brunch culture. Every like second place on the street is a brunch place. Oh yeah, I just sent you like two videos right before we started the pod. You would freaking have loved this coffee place this morning, dude.
I'll have to have a look.
But top few cities I've been to in Europe, I think, in the first couple of days in Porto. It's like amazing here. The food and coffee scene is unreal. Plus, there's coffee club fans, apparently. I think he was American, though. I'm pretty sure this dude was American. So maybe it's like not a Portuguese fan.
Squires is
but...
a Portuguese last name, but still counts.
Anyway, yeah, was still nice. Especially after, like, I'm like not in any... I don't look like a runner at all at the moment. And I'm just like walking down the street with my big hat on. I don't even know how to recognize
it. I saw the picture.
He said, yeah, that one. He said he saw my calves and my on shoes. So
that's George Beamish.
Yeah.
Textbook.
That's how it went.
Dead giveaway. Well, so it's been, as I said, 2 weeks, I think, since the Olympics, or maybe a little bit less. And so I've had a lot of time to process the experiences and all that. And I'm sure we're all on the same page where there's that feeling of deflation, I think is a good word for it, post-Olympics, where you've spent a year, I mean, more than a year, like leading up to this one thing and then it happens and then you're like, okay, what do I do next? I don't know how you guys have been processing those feelings, but I've looked back a little bit on it and everything. And I definitely have some thoughts, but I've mostly been trying to just move on and all that. But I think today is a very good time for us to take that kind of shared look back at our experiences and share it with the fans. I think we're going to do it chronologically. So we'll start off with Ollie, as he was the first one out of the trio to race. And we'll just kind of go through like the Olympic experiences for us. I'm sure everyone is pretty Olympic out in terms of what you've seen across Instagram and all that, talking about the beds, all that. But I think each of us would definitely have some pretty personal and unique, you know, experiences and moments that we had from the games that I think would be really awesome to share. So if you want to start off, Ollie, and we can kind of just all jump in when it makes sense to, but we can kind of go through it all. How about that?
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I guess the first thing I want to say is shout out to the AOC. I think we had the best setup in the village by a long way. Not to rub it in on George. I just think like you're an athlete,
stuff was incredible.
Yeah. When you're an athlete and you're very selfish, in your lead up, in your prep, you want everything to be nice. You forget the amount of work volunteers and a lot of people put in to make this Olympic experience important and as comfortable as possible. And I mean, US is the US. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of, you know, skin in the game, and they have their own high performance center, which Jared complained about because it was 20 minutes away. but they would have their own chefs there. They'd have their own tracks. Like they look after their athletes and do such a good job with that. The US is very good with that. But Australia, in the village, they're set up, the coffee machines, the food, the nostalgia, just the overall vibe that they were bringing in and the support structure they had there. It was incredible. So I wanted to thank them a lot for that. Going beyond with that stuff was pretty unreal.
Can I just jump in and just second that? And just one thing that I said during the games, which was just an interesting like kind of thought, was I was like, isn't it weird that we're in Paris, but it feels like you're in Australia? I'm sure it was more similar for you, George. Like it doesn't feel, when you're in the village, it doesn't feel like you're in Paris, but, and you probably felt like you were more like in New Zealand, George, but for us, like Australia, they did such a good job at making it feel like you were in Australia, and it was a really nice feeling. So yeah, I just second everything you just said and want to say thanks as well.
Yeah, it was incredible. For me, leading into the first heat, I definitely felt way more tired than I thought I would. I think the emotional toll of the games kind of crept in on me again before the heat, but I was still very confident, very positive. The heat that we were in was quite tough because, I mean, I had my other two teammates in it, and that's something that you kind of sometimes dread. Like, you don't want to be in a situation where you're racing against your teammates for six spots, and there's, you know, that's half the spots there. That's kind of tough when you know how good and talented they are as well. I was a bit tired. I didn't sleep great. My roommate, and it's not his fault in any way, shape or form, but he was a walker. So he was up at 4 a.m. Two nights before to get to his race. And that kind of knocked me around a little bit because then a drug tester came to look for somebody that wasn't in our room, knocking around on doors at 5 a.m. So didn't sleep great that day. The night before the race, slept terrible, got in and just was that I, it felt like I'd already run two rounds. but you know, like my body felt good. It responded well to the warm up, to the pre-meet stuff. And the crowd and the track was just incredible. It was such an incredible stadium and experience. And, for me, purely the race, like I just didn't race well. I just didn't race, or execute the race I should have been. I think I've maybe been faking a lot of confidence in some ways. I came off London thinking it's a good confidence booster, but I don't think it really actually gave me much confidence, that race, which I know it should have. But you know, going through that race for me mentally, I got in a good position. Nordis, I thought I was going to go and kind of make it a bit more honest. And he kind of tried to, but didn't. And then when we got to the last lap, I was trying to get prepared for the kick and I just got swamped and I just didn't respond well to it. And it was just a shocking part of the race. From that, I tried to obviously reset. I know Mario and I tried to reset and think, okay, well, we're going to go to this Repercharge and try and get those top three spots. And if you looked at the list, it was, you know, it was in a position where I was like, I feel confident that I can win this race or be top three. And, went out in the race and the South African gentleman, which I can't remember his name and I apologize for that. He took it out really hard. Made it really honest, got behind him, 300 to go, tried to make a move forward, and then 200 to go. An Italian guy just absolutely just smoked me, ran 3:32, and I just stumbled across the line fifth, I think, and that was it. That was my Olympics over. And obviously 2 weeks later, I got really good chats with my family, some mates, and my brother in particular. And I think we had to reassess like what constitutes a successful season, you know? And besides a lot of things that kind of happened to me in the games, particularly with some negative stuff that I'll talk with a bit later on social media, more or less, like I think a lot of my family and my brother were very, very concerned that I wasn't going to be able to make the Olympic Games, let alone compete in it. So, you know, to be able to go and compete at the Olympic Games and prepare for it and to go out there and race and try and give it the best possible shot you can. And I definitely walked away from the Repercharge disappointed, disheartened and very, very sad and felt like I could do better, but I didn't feel guilty about what the effort I put out there. So that was something that I thought was a positive, that yeah, it wasn't my races. I didn't race well, but I didn't feel like I did a disservice to myself. And that was something that I had to take away, which took some time, definitely because I was definitely beating myself up about it for a good few days afterwards. But I had to come to that realization that that's the best I could do. And, you know, if that's the case, it doesn't make me any less of an athlete. There's a great quote that my brother and I were talking about, that like you can do everything right, tick all the boxes, and you can still lose. And that's not weakness. That's just life. And you got to take what you can out of it. And I definitely felt like this is just, my brother and I were joking around, it's character building. It's all character building. Like, this is just all character building. You know, it's all buffering for the next story ahead. And that's the way my mentality is going to go. You know, I'm fortunate that I am healthy. I'm still running, and I've got some really exciting races coming up, and I'm going to try and perform the best I possibly can and keep building my momentum and keep getting better. And that's just the way that my Olympics went. And I just wanted to shout out to my family and friends that went and watched, all the Coffee Club fans that went and watched and supported. When it comes to the social media stuff, after the heat, I had been using Instagram to like direct message people, particularly people that I don't have their number for, that were in the village, some mates that, you know, like Curtis Marshall and the Paul Vaughan, and even Stewie and some other mates that don't have the actual mobile number. And I was using messages for that. And I made the mistake of, I mean, I was getting comments on my posts as well, that were kind of hurtful, but I made the mistake of looking at those messages, and they were quite hurtful, and just quite demeaning. And I think that was just kind of shitty. I tried to brush it off and not focus on it. But I think when you're at a emotionally vulnerable place, like what the Olympic Games can put you in, me not obviously making it to the semi, I was in a very emotional low, not a very, very high opinion of myself. And then you get those messages, it kind of dents the armor a little bit, and it gets into you and it gets under your skin. After the repercharge, I thought, oh, well, I think I'll be okay. I don't think I'll receive any other messages. Fortunately, I did. And I just wanted to make it clear that the messages were not from track fans. They were not from American track fans. They were not from any track fans, really. I received them mostly, what it looked like was from people that were betting, or just regular, general, mostly Australian people that were watching the games, which was also quite helpful to get messages like that from your own country. It wasn't ideal. But the nice thing was not that's a nice thing, but the thing that I took away from it was these people that didn't understand the sport, don't know me, don't know what it's like to be a track and field fan. They're just people that have turned on the Olympics and for some reason think that they have an opinion to blast me for my performances. So I spoke to my mum about it and my dad, because I felt very vulnerable at the time. And my mum just said, just get off it until the end of the season. And I think that was a good idea. And then they also brought up the idea of setting up a private Instagram, if you still want to use Instagram to post, you know, if you're traveling in Italy or want to post something, like, you know, with your family, like you can do that with a private Instagram. So that's why I'm going to take a break from my lead head role of social media duties. I'm taking a break. So I've taken a well overdue paid vacation under Coffee Club HQ. I know Tom's going to be just monitoring my profile. I would actually also like to really thank.
Look what's happened once. As soon as Tom got the job, we lost your Instagram.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all gone. So I'm a bit worried about my Instagram. My Instagram's probably deleted. But I would like to personally thank Athletics Australia, the AOC, World Athletics, Oakley, for reaching out and offering me support, offering me meetings with some people about how to maybe set up stuff on my Instagram, or also just how to combat stuff like that happens in the games. I mean, if you're not going to delete Instagram, which I think I will for the remainder of my time, particularly for the Olympics. But those Oakley, the AOC, AA, and World Athletics, I really appreciate what they said, and it made me feel very comforting to know that they're aware of that stuff going on. And I know it wasn't just me, all the athletes were facing it, but I felt like I wanted to say something out there so people knew that shit was happening. So, but overall, looking back at the Olympics, is it my favorite Olympics? Maybe for the village life and for the people and for the amazing experience that I got from outside of that stuff. But competition-wise, obviously not great. But that's okay because, you know, another 4 years, we're going to be going to LA and we're going to go crush it. So I'm going to stay in the position that I'm just going to keep getting better and just want to stay happy and healthy. And that's the plan from this Olympics, is what I've learned, is just to stay happy and stay healthy and keep trying to get better, keep going. So yeah, that's my update.
Thanks, yeah, bro. Man. Morgan, you got anything? Well, how was Oakley? did you meet, wait, who's the biggest Oakley athlete?
Mbappe.
I didn't meet him though. He was a wax.
I saw the picture.
It was a wax sculpture, but no, I didn't. They said a few top, like, big guys were around. I didn't get to meet many of them. I met a lot of like low track guys, and the Oakley house was insanely cool. So shout out to Oakley. That was a pretty epic experience. I mean, just to mention, well, and then I'll obviously give you guys the rein, but coolest thing was to see Novak Djokovic in the village and Van Aert in the village. And Van Aert, I look back at it now, Morgan, you should have got a photo with him. I feel like that was a missed opportunity, man. I think we should have just been awkward about it.
Me too.
I didn't get a picture with him, but I got a picture of Jared and him together.
And they're both very famous.
No, I was taking the picture, but it was a good picture nonetheless. So I'm happy.
I was at that coffee place. Well, you guys probably never went because you had good coffee, but at Costa Coffee, which, I mean, it was drinkable, but it was pretty bad. Apparently, it's like worse than Starbucks in the UK. Like, that's what it is. It's like below Starbucks in the UK. But I was there, right, and next to me in line was Remco. And wow, but I was too nervous to ask for a photo. I think it was the day before.
Sick picture.
The day before the road race. So like later on in the week.
They only really came in.
I regret not getting it. So but I was too nervous.
As part of my Olympic experience, the only people that I really fanboyed over hard were the cyclists. And I got to see the Australian cyclists a lot, like the day before as well. And I didn't ask any of them for pictures, but I did get talking to Ben O'Connor. And he's actually only 1 year older than me, and he used to do cross country. So we looked through some of the results, and like we've raced each other before, which was very funny. And then also, the coach for them was Matt Heyman. I don't know if you guys know who that is, but he's now retired, and he's like a coach. He was the team coach, but he's won Paris Roubaix like 10 years ago. Like he's pretty awesome.
That's legit.
And I went up to him and I asked for a picture, and he was so shocked. He was like so shocked that I was asking him specifically for a picture. He just like was caught very off guard by it, and in a nice way, you know. So I did get one picture with him. That's the one that I wasn't too shy for. But I would say, I mean, Ollie, there's so much that the one downside of us doing this kind of recap thing, as we mentioned earlier, is it's really hard to jump in when we're doing this on the internet with the delay.
Yeah, questions, anyone?
There's
questions.
Moments that we could expand on so well there. And I think in terms of specifically the races themselves and like the reaction from them, obviously I had a very similar takeaway myself. And I think there's really nothing else you can do in terms of like it's all about getting back on the horse as quick as you can and just learning and growing from them. That's all we really do every day in this sport. It's easy when things are going well, but when things aren't going well, all you can do is try and evolve and get better. And it sounds like you've really switched on to that, and it's awesome that you had the family, in particular brother, around to help you kind of get to that place, because I know your brother is really good for that and he always has good perspective and you respect him a lot, so you take those words to heart. So that's good to hear. The social media stuff was really shitty to see. I think it just kind of shows and this is not a positive really, but it shows the level that you're at, because I think, you know, up to this point, like if you're small enough, you know, no one's going to send you those types of messages. But I think we know that there are certain places on the internet where those messages exist. So like if you had a bad race and you went on Let's Run and you saw someone like saying something dumb on there, you'd be like, okay, that makes sense. It's Let's Run. Or if you go on even like a World Athletics post on Instagram and you see people saying some not so nice stuff, you're like, okay, that's a World Athletics post. Like people say dumb stuff on there and it's a bunch of randoms. But I think you probably don't expect it to come to your personal account. And that's the big difference, I guess. And I mean, you have to imagine for the stars, like that's their reality. Like that's, you know, that's yeah. their reality. But for someone like yourself to not be prepared for that reality, but then to experience it during one of the biggest races of your life is just so shitty. And I think, as you said, like it's a very emotionally vulnerable time. So in the moment, it's really hard to.
Well, imagine those big stars like Noah Lyles, like all those major guys. Like imagine the hate that they get. Like it put me in a perspective of like, yeah, this sucks that I'm dealing with this, but it made me realize that like some people are just getting way worse than this. Like how do they do it, you know, in that
well, you don't, you, how don't, do they you it's like you never deserve to have those messages.
No, you don't. You definitely don't. It's just like, but they would get it 10, 20 times, 100 times more than what I was experiencing. So it's just, it's
Did
something
that I
was.
Did you see the Noah Lyles hate as well? It was crazy. It was, so I watched the 200 final from the warm-up track and everyone was celebrating so hard. Every country was so happy that Noah Lyles got beat. It was like, it was crazy. And like Netflix was there and stuff because of all the Botswana people. And then when they, I don't know if you guys would have seen this. I think someone just told me about this. I didn't even see it myself. But when they did the welcome parade for Tobogo in back to Botswana, there was someone pretending to be Noah Lyles, like in a wheelchair or something.
Oh my God.
I just saw that today. Yeah. That was pretty bad.
It's fucking intense. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. I can get behind supporting Tobogo because he's really cool.
Yeah.
And Botswana winning gold medalist said, but the Noah Lyles hate's pretty crazy. But
yeah
I mean, like, and obviously like you're going to say he kind of brings it on.
He's done so much for the sport. He does, but he also like, he probably deserves all the praise he's getting too for putting the sport in the spotlight a little bit. I love that he just attacks the NBA constantly.
Yeah, he's still doing that, which I'm like impressed with. He's doubled down on
he's
it. Like,
he's standing by it. He's literally
and I respect that. Yeah.
But the normal Americans hate him so much for that because I still see comments about that. Like the fact that he didn't win the gold in the 200, people were bringing up that and saying like,
but he won the 100. It's like, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Especially because the basketball.
Olympic gold medal.
And the basketball did win. They almost lost to Serbia, though.
Yeah, they almost lost. They were,
But
my takeaway, Ollie. I'll jump in quick. I probably got one, maybe just like one question. But yeah, I mean, that was shitty to see. And I was, you know, sad for you for the Olympics to, especially because that was starting off the Olympics and there was a lot of like it. I kept thinking the heat with you, Mario and Jared, is something that if it all went really well, it would have been really cool to look back on and be like, oh yeah, all three of us in the same heat getting through. But that is such a tough position to be in. And yeah, you, I mean, nothing's given in the sport. We know this. No. Like,
dude, Jared was fifth in that heat, dude. Like, he could have maybe been distracted or lazy at some point thinking, oh, I'll get through here. And then all of a sudden two people dip him and he's out. He's in the ripper charge, you know, an extra race. So it just makes you, definitely 100% appreciate it.
Yeah. And for like, I mean, shit, you don't have to have even started thinking about it or you might not, maybe you'll spend the next 4 years trying to decide him. But like, have you, like knowing that Tokyo was emotional, knowing that Paris was emotional and knowing that you're an emotional guy. And we love that about you. And it is like one of your biggest strength as a person, but also as a runner, like it's definitely one of the things that makes you really good at running. But at, like, I don't know. Do you need to do the Olympics differently? Like, do you need to, you don't have to need to think about it, but like, you know, the village is emotional. Those first few days in the village were like, holy shit, this is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, do you need to, you know, next time, 4 years from now, your third Olympics, like, not be in the village? Are you going to do, I don't know, just like if you had a couple of thoughts on things you, yeah, you, shit, you might not have decided, but.
No, there's two, there's two things that I've realized after being able to go to my second Olympics, which is also just like so cool. I got to do two. Number one is it doesn't matter if it's your first, your second, third, fifth, 70th Olympics, you're still going to have the same, it's not going to change. You're still going to have that same pressure, that same feeling and that same overwhelmness that comes with the Olympic Games. So that's not going to change. And I can't expect myself to think that I'm going to change because I've been to multiple Olympics. It's just not how that works. You know, you're going to be nervous, you're going to be ready, and you're going to be dealing with a lot of those external pressures. I think personally, after the situation I felt with the rooming, with the beds, which I thought the beds were fine. I didn't have any issues with the beds, but in general, just being in a bigger space, even maybe a living room where you can kind of hang out, there wasn't really any of that situation. It was like the downstairs area, but even down there, the Olympics is on, people are cheering, they're yelling, people are coming back with medals. You know, there's that kind of environment, which is great to be a part of, but also can cause, you know, a bit of overwhelming feelings. I'd probably look at maybe staying out of the village if I made a third Olympics. But I would come into the village at times, obviously, and be part of the team and enjoy that stuff. But I think particularly... just looking back on it, yeah, having maybe my own, like having your own room, like as a professional athlete at competing at the Olympic Games and you want to go and compete for a medal, and if you're at that level, I don't think it's a really bad thing to think, oh, I should go to get a hotel and get my own room. Grant Fisher did that. He won two medals, and I think you would, if you ask him, like, what were the factors that you think helped you at the Olympic Games, I guarantee you, for him, having his own room, having that space, that quiet space, even though he was able to get in and out, maybe, I think that was probably valuable. And I know not everyone can do that. It's expensive as hell, and I'm sure Nike helped him with it. But is it something that I might be looking at in 4 years' time that would be better for me as just the type of person I am? 100%. But for me now, like Joe Klecker always says, all eyes are on Rome or whatever, Tokyo. All roads lead to Rome.
All roads lead to Tokyo.
All eyes lead to Rome. But yeah, like I'm going to focus on Tokyo and I want to keep progressing as an athlete. And the nice thing is, if you look at our sport, people in the next year, they're going to go into the races, and there's going to be new people that are coming up doing crazy well. It's going to be the same people that are doing crazy well, but it's just an ever-changing sport. There's always going to be you know, the next race, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on, is just being able to keep progressing, keep getting better, and every year I've been able to do that, so I'm hoping to do that for the rest of the season. But I have thought about it, George, and that's maybe what I'll look at doing for LA. I'm hoping On will just have some big fucking mansion house that we can all just stay at, and then just like have our usual routine, and then we just go on for the Olympics, you know. But we'll see.
Pretty sweet.
We'll start work on that. No,
yeah.
I thought about that as well. I was a bit jealous of some of the people who got to, because I was in the village for a while as well, like 6 days going into the race. And I think I was okay with it, but it's like for people, not everyone may would understand, but like the way the rooms worked, all of them are slightly different. But for example, my room, and I think Ollie's was the same. It's like there's eight people in like a little apartment thing. And so for us, there's like eight dudes, right? And we're all competing at different times. Two bathrooms. Dude, our place was a bit messy, I will say. But we're all competing at different times. You know, people are getting done with their competitions like before you, all this stuff. Like, it is pretty hectic to be in that environment. It's a very different environment from our normal environment that we're used to around races. And I think there's so many good things about it. You get to meet so many new people, or you get to catch up with old friends. You get to be part of the team. Like, that's so amazing. But there are definitely some things that can be a bit challenging with it as well. So I think, yeah, like Ollie mentioned, Grant did. Did you guys hear that Grant also came up to St. Moritz in between?
Yeah.
I heard he
missed his private jet though.
Apparently Nike chartered a private
jet.
Dude, and missed, I don't think it's possible to miss a private jet.
That's what I said. It's private. That's the whole thing. You can't miss it. They're waiting for you.
I don't think you can miss
it. That's what I was wondering.
No. And so I think we got to get to the bottom of that rumor, because when he said that, that really was my exact response. I was like,
"Yeah,
but that sounds crazy and expensive."
It worked at USA's going back to Park City. So I guess he was just doing He was just repeating the recipe.
Yeah, that's true.
Worked pretty well.
I think it.
Yeah, congrats.
I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah.
But yeah.
Am I next?
Well, do you think we should just quickly just give a shout out to Yared while we're talking on, while we're on the 1500? Sure. I mean, the 1500, as everyone knew it was going to be, was an amazing, exciting event. The final was absolute madness. And our boy Yared, wow. I think, as Ollie mentioned, he got a bit of a scare in the heats. And then after that, he was not locked fucking in, around.
Incredible.
He was locked in.
He looked so good after that.
Led the whole semi, made it to the final, was locked in, got it done. He ran it, I mean, perfectly. Had probably the best, or the second best, but probably the best race of his life to grab a bronze, very close to a silver, and so close even to Cole for the gold. I don't know. Shout out to Cole for coming through and winning one of the best 1500 meters ever. I shed a tear for Jakob. Jakob, I think, ran... I don't think Jakob... I think he ran what he thought was like the best race that, for him to do well, you know, and it just turns out that now that event is so good that there's three guys that can stick with you at that pace and outkick you at the end. So I was sad he didn't get rewarded for, like, you know, giving it such a good effort, but everyone else put in the same effort and came out on top, and that's how it goes. So yeah, Josh Kerr coming second. That was pretty, I mean, I guess he was probably the favorite by the end, honestly. So
I think they were all in the mix.
It was such a great event. So, and also shout out to Mario as well. It lived up to the hype for sure. Shout out to Mario. Mario had a pretty tough season, didn't make it through as well. And he's ended his season as well. I'm sure you guys follow him on Instagram and seen it. So our thoughts are with him. He just needs to take some time off and to recover as well. Just like many of us, and he'll be back on top as well. So yeah, that's the quick 1500 recap.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. I was in the stadium for that, like right above the, actually like above the start line, like at 300 meter mark. And it was next level. It would have been sick if there was a French athlete in it. Being in the stadium with a French athlete was insane.
So yeah, should we talk more about how fucking amazing the stadium was? I mean, Ollie, you did mention how great the stadium was, but guys, French fans, thank you. Like the fans, every fan that was there, as an athlete's perspective, it was chills. Like every time you walked into that stadium, it was so beautiful to see. It was the pinnacle of the sport. Like you could just feel it.
It was unreal. Yeah, the women's steeplechase was the night of the 15th. I'm like 90% sure. And it was that, I don't know if you guys watched that, but that French girl, like, had that crazy last lap to finish fourth and run like 8:58. That was the craziest stadium experience of my entire life, easily. Like the, like, it's actually like giving me goosebumps, like thinking about it back to it, but like the level of like noise, like during that last lap, no one was, maybe a few people watching the winners, 95% of the stadium was just watching this like French woman come through for fourth. And like, honestly, she got kind of close to the middle and she broke the European record. It was fucking, it was unbelievable.
And she got engaged.
Yeah. And then she got, and then she asked her, and then she proposed on the track. Yeah. I don't even know how that worked.
So good.
Yeah. Stade de France was something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next. Should I go?
Yeah, I think so.
George's Olympic experience. All right, I'm going to start in the Olympics, and then I'm going to go, and then maybe I'll go back to the build-up to the Olympics, which obviously was quite a factor for me this time around. But first of all, yeah, just like similar to Ollie, just a big shout-out to the NZOC and like the NZ team for everything they did in Paris and the New Zealand, you know, building and everything. It was crazy walking past the Australian building. Like you guys do the Olympics very well. It was very impressive. We were at the other end and we had a cool New Zealand setup. The welcome into the village, is something I'll remember for, you know, hopefully for the rest of my life. And was really special. I should have I should have worn my point armor right now. But that's what I'm like getting them if anyone follows me on Instagram. And I know Morgan came to watch someone's hockey. I can't remember which.
I saw your
Maybe
one.
When I was doing
I saw your one. I saw you get welcomed. You and
Wait, when I was doing Maya. It? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah, because yeah, you came with Maya. That's right. Yeah, it was that was really cool. And yeah, just like I felt like that I had more support for the Olympics than any other race, you know, I've ever run, which is maybe that makes sense. And it's probably no surprise to anyone, but was incredible to feel and felt like, you know, half of Hawke's Bay was in Paris, which is, you know, where I'm from, like the amount of messages I was getting and just like people in Paris, random Kiwis and a few in the stadium. So that was just really special. And I had, you know, a huge amount of gratitude just for being there and, you know, for a number of reasons, but just making the start line. By the time I got there was an effort in itself. And, you know, proud to have raced for New Zealand at the Olympics. And yeah, something, you know, lifelong, you know, something I'll remember for the rest of my life. So that's really cool. But yeah, like I always said, the village is pretty hectic and is a really fun experience at the, when you get there and, you know, heaps of people to hang out with and meet and, you know, so much Olympics to watch with the, like with everyone else and from New Zealand. So it kind of does feel like you're in a little bubble. New Zealand stuff. I was rooming with Santana, which is always a lot of fun. But ours was way less hectic than eight people. We was just me, Sam, and then Zoe on the other side of our like kind of split living room thing. So ours was very chill. But even further back, I had the craziest trip into Paris, actually. I tried to go to Paris on a day that, it took me 30 hours to get from Zurich to Paris. I don't know if anyone can imagine how far Zurich and Paris are apart, but they're pretty close. It's like a 4-hour train ride and it took me 30 hours. There was a lot of deliberation on the team whether we should take the train or fly. And I was actually the only person, I didn't even realize it, I was the only person who decided to take the train. But like every single on employee was taking the train. And it seemed like a good idea. So I was taking the train on like the day before Morg and them. I get halfway to Zurich. Halfway from Zurich to Paris, I get to Basel to change trains, which that was probably my first mistake. Should have taken a direct one somehow. But get changed in Basel, and then they cancel every single train to Paris that day. No more trains. So I was stuck in Basel and decided to go back to Zurich. Basically, I had no choice but to go back to Zurich. But then I found a flight. So I took a train direct from the airport to the airport from Basel, get to the airport, go to the gate. I'm just like, oh, it's all good. I'm going to get there just a few hours late. Canceled flight. Canceled train, canceled flight. End up staying in a hotel in Zurich overnight at the airport. And I get to Paris like 2 hours before Morg and Maya. I just did like a loop of Switzerland the day before I was trying to get to the Olympics. It was ridiculous. And I was traveling on my own, which was like a real bummer. But eventually I got there and had a few fun days in the village. But actually, my village experience the first few days was insanely hectic. All I was doing was getting treatment. Literally, I was, I guess a big thank you to Jason Ross, who everyone has heard about by now, and also John Ball, who people will probably also know from previous episodes. But John Ball was in Paris, and I was spending, I think I spent like 4 hours with John Ball 2 days in a row before my race. And I was like Ubering out to his hotel to see him and at like short notice. And so I was just spending every minute before my race, like trying to get my body to a point where I was making the start line. I mean, this like on the way to Paris, like I'm like limping through train stations, like limping through airports. It was I was just in a lot of pain pretty much constantly for the last 6 weeks, and I guess now 8 weeks because it's been another two. But and that made it a little like that was a bit of a bummer in the lead up to my race in terms of like, I was trying to get my haircut in the village. I was trying to get, I was trying to do the village stuff, like go hang out. And I was just like on the treatment table all day, every day. I've still got scars actually. It was, dude, John Ball was going ham on my hips / back. I had like, Sam never sent it to me, but Tanner took a photo of my like back and hips, like after I got back from a John Ball session, and it was next level. One day we'll get that from Sam, but he never sent it to me. But I mean, it was helping. Like I was running on the treadmill with John Ball, as you do, as Morgan knows. And like I'm happy running through pain. I was doing it for a long time, and I was happy to do it as to get to the Olympics. But like mechanically, it was so difficult. And so that was like what was helping with John Ball. Just kind of trying to get myself through a few days of running in the lead up to the race. And I'll try not to talk about too much about that before the race. I'll get to that after. But yeah, like I knew I'd raced in Paris at the Diamond League. Obviously, you guys know it was in, my body was in not good shape then, and I was able to race then. So, you know, I was going into the race still confident that I had, you know, hopefully some fitness from pretty much May. Like that was, I was in the best shape of my life, you know, at the start of the year, probably, you know, obviously the season was going great indoors, and the first couple of months outdoors, like April through May, I was in really good shape, and just was hoping that would had held on a little bit. And I landed in heat three again with Girma for the second year in a row, same as Budapest. And which is normally a pretty simple equation, like he's always going to go earlier than anyone else normally. Like Budapest, it was 1200, maybe a mile, that he made a move, and I was expecting something pretty similar this year. And yeah, man, I was going into the Olympics ranked sixth in the world, and really excited to race still. And I was just trying to treat it like any other race and act like my body was in a good place. And it was slow. It was so slow. It was easily the slowest first, I think it was like 3:00. It was either like 2:58, 2:59, or like 3 minutes to the first K, which like I've never done before. Like I don't, it's kind of a bummer I don't get to run tactical steeples really ever, like USAs or, you know, basically only national champs. So that's kind of a crazy feeling, but it also was kind of nice, because running fast was really painful. And yeah, it was pretty comfy the first K, apart from landing in my water jumps were, I don't know if anyone was looking that closely, but my water jumps were very bad and very painful. Like I just couldn't, my body just like wouldn't allow me to like land, and just like, I don't know, just going over the water jump was terrible, for a variety of reasons. Also, I hadn't been able to practice a water jump for 2 months, which probably didn't help. And yeah, at exactly 1200, I just followed Girma at the back. Like I went off the line in like last place, assuming Girma would do the same. And he did, sat at the back with Girma for a while. And, at exactly three laps to go, he just hit the front and hammered the last three laps. And, yeah. And I tried to like follow him around the outside and get on the back of the front pack, which is, you know, where I'm pretty comfortable normally. And we're running fast the last 1200. I think it like, even still is the fastest last K I think I've run in a steeple, just because of how slow it was at the beginning and how fast you needed to close to be in the top five. And, you know, Kenneth was up there, and a Kenyan, and John Simon, who I've raced a lot of times. And yeah, I was like just trying to stay as relaxed as possible and just hope that it was either going to break up a little bit as from top seven, which seemed, I think we must have broken away a little bit. And yeah, hitting the bell, I think I was still in like seventh on the back of the pack, and I was hoping I was going to have a good last water jump, but I think it was pretty bad if I remember rightly. But like coming into the last 100 meters and in seventh place with five spots on the line, is not like that's, you know, I should feel really comfortable in that position, and normally I would. And, you know, I hope I still gave the fans some hope. Like everyone probably thought it was under control, and I hope you did, because that's, you know, that's kind of racing I want to do still. And that, you know, seventh place with 100 to go and five go, like that's bread and butter. That should be no problem. And, you know, I'm proud that I still ran a race that I was in until the last 100 meters. Like I made the start line, but I didn't just like jog around and say I'd race. Like I was, you know, I was in it, and I gave myself a good shot at making the final. And sprinting was just out of the question, and maybe there was probably a little bit of fitness was just not there from the mistraining over 6 to 8 weeks. And couldn't grab that fifth spot, and you know, finished seventh in my heat, which was, yeah, I mean, it was a real bummer. I would have loved to be in the final still, you know, across the line. And and like Ollie, you know your Olympics is done for now. And but I also crossed the line with just like a huge amount of gratitude still that I'd made it to the line and finished. And you know, I have to be honest, like there was also a big amount of relief, like knowing that I was done with the pain for like those few days. And if I'd made the final and finished fifth, like I would have done whatever it took. Like I was on taking painkillers, obviously, to get through it. And I would have done the same for the final. But I mean, I didn't cool down, and I didn't walk without pain for another few days. And so there was definitely some relief to not have to go through that again, but like I would have done it, and I was trying to make the final, obviously, and I would have done whatever it took to run again 2 days later, whatever that would have looked like. Might have been ugly, but it is what it is. And yeah, didn't cool down. Like that was not even within the realm of possibility, and got an MRI the next day. Like I've said, and had a gooch stress reaction / fracture, depending on the report thing, which was not a big surprise at that point. And and so shut the season down. And it was nice to just like have that mental like switch, knowing what it is. Like that's often the hardest part with an injury. Like you guys both know, and everyone else knows, like knowing what it is, and knowing something was there and why it hurts is like a big part of it. And it was just nice to have that like weight off my chest, and just get time to spend with my family, and not have to train through what was like, you know, the most painful month of training I've ever gone through, and some of the most painful runs I've ever been on in Samaritz. And in Zurich was just miserable. Like every run was so painful. And you know, definitely couldn't have done it without having teammates just to try and distract myself, and having Kai for a few workouts in Samaritz and in Zurich was super helpful, because I think I just would have just not done it otherwise. And it was just like you guys probably just didn't, like I was running workouts and then taking 2 days of cross training to try and get back to a point to run again. And yeah, when you get changed, like if you guys know from a sacrum only, like one of the biggest symptoms of a sacrum is if you can't put your socks on, like when you stand, like you can't shift your weight between your feet because it's like a pelvis stabilizer thing. And so putting on your race kit for the Olympics and you have to sit down to do it because you're in so much pain a couple of hours before the race is not super confidence building a couple of hours out. So, and that was like one of the main reasons I knew it was, or at least like I was pretty confident it was a bone thing, and why I wasn't surprised after the MRI, because that pelvis thing is like a pretty big factor or symptom. like where you, and I still have to get dressed sitting down 2 weeks later, which is fucking annoying. it's still pretty painful. And yeah, that was the build up. And you know, I probably wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for the, like, if it wasn't the Olympics. I would have, you know, probably got an image after Paris Diamond League, and or even before Paris Diamond League, like when it started. But it's kind of one of those things, partly like didn't want to know, and also regardless of what the image said, I was going to try and run anyway because it was the Olympics, you know. Like I was going to do what it took to make the start line. So I never got the image beforehand, and you know, I don't regret it. I don't think it ever got any worse. It was the same for basically those 6 weeks from USA's when it started. And yeah, that was, so here we are trying to heal my gooch. If anyone, it's like, it's basically where your hamstrings attach. So these guys have both had the pelvis one, obviously. And now I've got a pelvis one, but, these guys had like the front one. It's called pubic symphysis, which is like your front of your pelvis. It goes like this. And mine is like my right sit bone where your hamstring attaches, for anyone that wants to imagine it. It's like the hamstring and adductors, and like maybe they like attach to this like sit bone. And so they just like tug on it. So it's kind of like a traction stress reaction fracture thing. Which means like my hamstrings and adductors like just haven't worked for like 6 weeks or now, yeah, longer. And I haven't been able to lift or anything on it because I just can't load those tissues. So I was just lifting with one leg the whole time in Samaritz and everywhere. And in terms of like what I, how I think I got it, or you know, what I would do differently, or if you know, I'm like, I don't know, why are you getting injured 6 weeks before the Olympics? With like 99% confidence, I would say it was sickness related, like 100%. More than 100%, it was sickness related from like, I'm not going to go back and go, everyone knows how that went for a month of not sleeping and not recovering. And at the end of that month of not healing and not recovering, like ended up with a stress fracture, which makes sense when your body just can't recover. And so I would do stuff differently. That's what I would do differently when I get sick, or that sick. Not training hard on it. And if you can't sleep like to recover because of like symptoms, then you got to sort that out before you try and train through it. That's the short version anyway. Seeing as we're a little short on time, and I want to make sure we hear Morg's story.
Oh yeah.
Any insight? Voice? Yeah. my voice is running out.
That's unfortunately, both of us have you know exactly. seasons ended in the same way. And specifically my last Olympics, I ran through a stress reaction in my pelvis. So I know exactly what you mean when you say you have a weird sense of relief. Wasn't it weird? You have a big sense of relief once you get done, just to know that you don't have to push through it anymore, and that you can finally give your body the time that it's been asking for and just hit the reset button. So I think from the outside, I think I was also very relieved to see you make it through it and be able to hit that relax and reset button, because it's, I mean, in our sport, I think sometimes we do have to take risks, but I think when you're pushing through something, what happens often is like, you know, you can push through something for a short period of time, but when you push through something for a month, 6 weeks, you know, it normally doesn't end well. And sometimes you just have to do it. And this was one of those cases, but it's never pretty and it's never enjoyable being the one doing that. So it was tough to see that happen, you know, from the outside. But I definitely felt that sense of relief, and yeah, still proud for the way that you pushed through it the whole time. being in that pain and went out there and representing your country is really not easy to do, especially, you know, when the spotlight is bright like it was. So definitely commend you on that. But yeah, I definitely felt that sense of relief that you were finally able to give the body the time it needed.
Thanks, Mom.
Honestly, it's like, even in some ways for me, it's very impressive to be able to, like, when you think about the injury, particularly with the pelvis, like, I'm running flat and, like, probably start off at a quick pace and then not changing anything. It just stays that pace. You had to jump over shit and then jump into a fucking puddle, like, with dealing with that. Like, it's just, that's quite an impressive feat in of itself. And obviously, like, it does, it's always sucky to hear that, you know, you wanted to experience more of the village and you had to, like, get Ubers for 4 hours treatments with John Ballsack, like, just destroying your hips and whispering in your ear that you're tight as fuck. So it's commendable, George. I mean, like, obviously not what you wanted, but to be able to put yourself through that and be able to, you know, compete in the way that you did, which was so commendable for New Zealand. Like, we're obviously very, very proud of you. And I'm sure your family, friends, Hawke's Bay people, I don't know what you call them, the Hawke's Bayans or whatever, the Bayans. I'm sure they're all very proud of you as well, because doing that is definitely no small feat. And I can't even comprehend having to deal with that type of pain, jumping over things and dealing with the mechanical side of the running, the steeplechase. So it's just kind of insane. So you've definitely earned that break, and hopefully in a few weeks' time, and you're going to be standing up proud, putting on your underwear without any worries. So I'm hoping that will happen sooner than later.
Yeah, I'll continue with the Gooch updates.
Yeah, keep
run it back.
Geordie Gooch watch. Yeah.
You know, it's a wait. No, we did skip a year. Sorry. I was gonna say, has this been like every year around this time we've had someone on Gooch watch? But I think in 2022 we were Gooch.
We were Gooch's
world good. Yeah, we were Gooch free 2022. But geez, we gotta protect those Gooches, boys. What's going on?
I know. Drink more milk. Gotta drink more milk.
In the interest of time, I do have an appointment in 7 minutes. I'll speed run this. I mean, you boys have already done an amazing job at capturing a lot of the athlete perspective, being in the village or just being in part of the Olympics in general. And as I mentioned before, I did come into the village 6 days before my race, which is actually a little bit longer than I wanted to be in there before my race, just because of, you know, the emotional ups and downs that you experience as part of the Olympics. But I don't really regret it, because not to be too dramatic, but I think in Tokyo with no crowd, with, you know, like the COVID Olympics, I definitely did not appreciate, I guess, what you would just call like the beauty of the Olympics. I mean, it's really tough at times being a part of it and being so closely connected to, you know, these people. But the ups and downs, you know, that's what makes it, I think, so special. And like, I wouldn't normally be so dramatic like that and like talk about sport in that way. But I think like just being there and seeing everything going on around you and seeing how it was affecting people was very, very special. And I think this time, much more so than 3 years ago, it really hit me. And it was just amazing to really be a part of it. And I definitely was very thankful to be there for it. But in the lead up, I was trying to just stay locked in. Like, that was kind of my goal every day, I was kind of telling people, like, I'm just trying to not go on holiday mode. Because when you're in the village and you have, you know, you have a barista downstairs, you have 3 meals cooked for you a day, you have all these, you have nothing to do pretty much. You go for like one training session. It's so easy for me at least, to kind of switch into like holiday mode. And like, I lost track of what day it is like straight away, which is not always the best sign, because I was like, oh, I don't know how many days until I race. So I was trying to stay like very organized. I did meet with the Australian psychologist, who is amazing. I often every year I get to meet with him like at these events, and he recommended that I do like two visualization sessions a day. And so that was one thing that I think grounded me really well. I would kind of plan that out and have these two sessions where like I gave a lot of mental focus towards the upcoming race. And then it was good because like in the other times I was able to just feel like okay with just enjoying everything that was going on, feeling like, all right, I've gotten like my preparation for the day, like everything's leading towards this race still. I'm not like getting carried away in any direction. But yeah, honestly, in terms of my preparation for those 2 weeks, like leading in particular, like everything was pretty good. I had a good final session, really good final session in Zurich, actually. So I was feeling really good. I was feeling very excited. I was, you know, we've talked about it so much, how good every event is, like the level of our sport, how much it's elevated, and how much it elevates each year. And looking at the start list when they came out the day before my race of the 5K, I definitely felt that because I'm looking at my list and you have to, in the 5K, it was top eight, make it through. And there's about 21 people in each heat. And so you're like, okay, I have to beat 13 people, whatever, but you have to be in top eight. And you're looking through the list and it's like, I mean, it's amazing. It's so good, but you're like, holy shit. Like there's so many good people here. And you know, on paper, everyone always looks better. That's not how it doesn't always play out like that in the actual race, but I knew I had to run really, really well, really, really, really well if I was going to qualify. But I was confident because, you know, I ran 13 flat 2 months ago and I've honestly just had amazing training since then. So, and I thought that the race would actually suit me. I wasn't sure exactly how it would play out, but I thought it would suit me. Just, you know, being like a championship style race, I thought people would do like some silly stuff and I'd be able to kind of just like stay calm and just really get ready for the last lap, but the last K in particular. I was, you know, looking through old videos and in the 5K, if you want to make it in the championship race, like your last K is going to be really quick. There's no getting around that. So that's what I was mentally prepared for. And before getting out there, we were watching, I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but like you could see the other races kind of on TVs they had around. And we just see the absolute carnage that was heat one of the 5K. I'm not sure if the people at home remember, but there were multiple falls. I think about five or six people went down in the end and like really good people. And I was like, holy shit, like what's about to happen? And this did bring up like after the race, reflecting back on it. I think a lot of people were really happy to not have time qualifiers in the 5K, but this is maybe the potential downside is that it will lead to more slow races, which yeah, when everyone's so good and so bunched up, this shit is just going to happen. And I think when we have more time, we can probably talk more about the amount of people getting put through because it was, in my opinion, just ridiculous how many
22,
people
wasn't
put
it?
Through.
22 it, total.
The final six extra people, I think, got put through. And it was just ridiculous because I'm like, some of these people are causing the falls. Like if no one's getting DQ'd, but six people are getting put through, like it's not like I was just like, I wasn't going to get that mad about it, but I thought it was a bit ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I agree. I 100% agree. It's ridiculous.
We can talk
you can't
about
put
that
six, three though. People through and then say, oh, no one was at fault. Somebody caused the fall. You have to DQ them or not put them through.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
so,
just insane. And then some people didn't get put through that should have been put through. Like that whole thing was just kind of crazy, but
yeah.
Anyway.
So we'll talk about that
for
more,
another time. For another time.
My race, similar to the first heat, went out very slow. I think around a 3 minute first K type vibe. But luckily my race got going a bit earlier than the first heat. I mean, everyone was still in it, but, just after halfway, I think it was Binium, the young Ethiopian stud, went to the front and started running a good pace. I think like 62s, like something that felt like, all right, this is like 5K pace. And, Jakob was doing Jakob things, you know. I think he started at the back, I'm not certain. But he kind of moved up like around this time, moved to the front. And then with two laps to go was when the pace really started feeling like it was like ramping up a lot. And I was sitting in a spot where I was definitely probably, I was too far back, like watching it back. But at the time I felt really comfortable because I could still see the leaders, like, and I could see the leaders. I felt good there. I was on the inside and I could see all these people making these kind of crazy moves, like on the outside, trying to move up and get in position, like with on the second to last lap. And my kind of, my thought process during this whole time, all the way into the last 100, was like, just stay on the inside and just run as fast as you can, making sure that you have a fast last 100. Like, that was how I thought my best path to qualifying was. I've seen it before where people waste energy by going too early with the moves or going like too wide when there's just so many people in it. And yeah, looking back at the video, I think I was too far back to really make do what I wanted to do in the end. But at the time, that's just how like I was looking at it. And I was happy with that. And I think in our race, I think this was the only fall, just with 100 to go, Abdi went down really, really hard. I don't think he's okay. I think he actually got injured pretty bad from this. So I hope he heals up fine. But he went down. The fall didn't actually like affect me at all because I was able to go on the inside of it. But it just added another layer of chaos. And I went for in the last 100. And I was definitely catching like the front guys. That's who I was keying off. And then I crossed the line. And this was just the most devastating thing is like, I thought I was in the top eight when I finished. Like, I'm pretty sure I was in the top eight, but I hadn't noticed that there was like three guys kicking really hard, like in lane three or four, like pretty wide. And so then, you know, the names roll up on the screen and I see that I was in ninth and I was just like, I was so annoyed and disappointed. I was really annoyed at myself for not knowing that those people were there. And I was like, I mean, for a little bit, I was like, oh, if I had known they were there, then I would have been top eight. But that annoyance went away when I did watch a replay of it. And those guys that ended up like sixth, seventh, eighth were definitely kicking like quicker than I was. Like, you know, they were really good. So I was like, okay, well, I don't think it actually made a difference that I didn't have that awareness. But yeah, that feeling of like thinking that I made it through and then not making it through definitely did suck. And you know, I went through similar to these guys, like some, you know, all these emotions, disappointment. But I mean, I've said this so many times at this point, but I just, with the 5K, with every event, you just need to get better. I was like, I looked through the list of the people that beat me and I was like, okay, well, these people are really, really fucking good. Like, no one beat me that was like a 13:10 guy or something like that. You know, like, I'm pretty sure everyone that beat me was like, all right, these people are really, really legit. Like, the guy that was in eighth place was, what's his name? Yuhune, the guy who paced Oslo 5K and ran, and then still stayed in the race and ran 12:50. Like, that's the guy who came eighth in front of me. So I was like, well, like, they're very good. So I just need to continue to train and get better and then I'll be able to compete with them. I mean, you see, you know, the top guys make it look easy and that's like frustrating sometimes, like Jakob or like a Grant. Like, it's like, how do they always make it look easy? I mean, I think the answer is just being really, really good. So
healthy yeah. For years, consistent, turning exactly. Up and just competing. Like, I think this is the first year where you've actually, Morgs, you've actually been like healthy.
Yeah.
Like you've had little issues along the way, but you've been mostly healthy. You haven't had any major injury or major setback in training. You've been mostly healthy. And if you finish this season like that, that's just going to be a huge, huge, huge plus for the next year because all of that is going to still be there and you can progress with it. You haven't really had any of that progression. And that's a real big positive that I think you obviously understand. And I think it's something that, you know, is huge in our sport. If you look at all those top guys, they're always consistently there. They're always doing well. It's because they're healthy and they're able to perform at that level without dealing with any setbacks. So like the first step is to obviously get healthy. And then if you can get to that point and then just consistently try and get there. But then it's tough because like when I was talking to Dathan, like he's like the way we put our bodies through, injuries are going to happen. Like it's going to happen. You're going to get injured. Like it's just unfortunate thing that we're not invincible and being able to predict those things are sometimes just almost impossible. But the positive, I guess, for you, Morgs, is that you're fucking so good right now. So moving into the next few races, I'm excited to see Morgan leading into an Ollie ism of self-hatred. And then we might see some 12:50 races coming up or some quick 3Ks or even some fast 1500s. You never know. But
I have the same conclusions. I'm not going to put any pressure on myself for these next two races, considering just everything that's happened since Paris with the sickness and all that. But I've kind of always had that, the idea. I think you kind of trick yourself when you get to the, you called it false confidence, which is maybe also a good word for me to use, but I was like, I'm ready to go. You know, I'm obviously going to tell myself that. I'm like, I'm ready to go. Like, guys that have run 13 minutes, whose PB is 13 flat, have made the finals and they've been competitive in the finals before. I definitely 100% thought like that going into it. But then, you know, with perspective, it's still like, yeah, this is my first year really able where I've been able to be healthy and start to actually progress again in the right way. And oftentimes, I mean, always it takes more than just 1 year. So I've come to a very similar conclusion. So, but thank you for the kind words.
You're amazing, Morgs.
We're really running out of time here.
On the cusp of being great. Yeah, we'll let you get to your appointment. You'll probably get in trouble for being late.
No, but it's all good. No,
just my fault. I was late on the thing.
No.
Stupid laptop.
Even 13 minutes was like, that was a breakthrough for you, but it was also overdue. So I think the 12:50 breakthrough is a lot closer. Like, you're right on the cusp of being great. We're all good. We're on the quest to be great.
My brother was drunk on red wine. He said, Coffee Club boys, your Olympics is LA. It's not Paris. It's LA.
I love that.
He said, it's like Paris is not your Olympics. Why would it be your Olympics? Los Angeles is your Olympics. It just makes all this sense. Like, why would it not be the LA? All your fans, everything, all the lead up. And also, you need a bit of a drama in the previous Olympics. So then you go to LA and then you win the whole fucking thing. Perfect. And Chris walked away with empty bottle of wine. So I was like, thanks, Chris.
Love that. I think that's an amazing note to end on. I guess I should end by just shouting out Helen, getting bronze in the marathon. Just all our teammates. Cinta making it through to the semis, going through Repechage, having three amazing races in 3 days, ending with a national record, 3:58. And also our new teammate, Maya, bettering her New Zealand national record, making it to the semis in her first one, which is absolutely amazing. Hopefully we can have all our teammates on in the next couple of months to share their own stories from it. But just, shout out to the team. And once again, thank you everyone for the support during these times, even though the races didn't go exactly how we wanted. I think it's so nice that we can come together and end on this great positive note and just know that we have this amazing support behind us as well. So thank you so much for that. And
thanks, guys.
I guess I should go to my appointment now.
All right.
That's it. Episode 149 of the podcast.
Cheers, boys.
Coffee Club podcast out.
See you, boys.
See you guys in a week.